Damage control continues over leaked U.S. classified documents related to Russia's war in Ukraine.
The nature of it and the recency of it could make it very, very serious for the U.S. government.
Another purported video emerges that appears to show the brutal killing of a captured Ukrainian soldier.
Ukrainian Minister of Defense asked media and society not to repost these videos and not to try to guess the identity of the soldier who is in the video in order to protect the privacy of his family.
And later in the program, another one of Ukraine's neighbors now sees itself as directly threatened by Russia. Today is Wednesday, April 12th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. The Pentagon's top official spoke out Tuesday for the first time about the recent leak of classified documents related to Russia's war in Ukraine. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the United States will investigate the reported leak of the classified documents until the source is found.
I've directed an urgent cross-department effort, and we've referred the matter to the Department of Justice, which has opened a criminal investigation.
So just what are these documents and how did they get leaked? For more on this, I spoke with Jamil Jaffer, president and founder of the National Security Institute. Jamil, thanks so much for being with us. First, what exactly are these documents?
Well, Lori, it looks like these were highly classified U.S. government documents that were potentially part of a Department of Defense briefing binder for senior leaders or the like. What we have here are a variety of documents related to U.S. national security matters, some about the war in Ukraine, specifically about our assessment of the Ukrainians' capabilities and their specific military assets, some about our relations with other nations and whether we can convince them to work with the Ukrainians, and some just about internal politics or ongoing efforts inside of some of these countries. So the documents range both on the classification level. Some are secret, some are top secret, some are sensitive compartmented information, including information from signals intelligence and human intelligence. So a variety of documents, some of which could be significantly damaging to U.S. national security.
Is there any way to track down how these got leaked? Obviously, this was someone who had access to these very highly classified documents. Is it possible to figure it out? Because if they don't find this person, wouldn't you say there's more critical classified information could get leaked?
Well, you know, Lori, it's hard to know exactly whose documents these are or where they came from, because typically these documents aren't necessarily customized to the individual person who has them. Oftentimes, these briefing document binders are you know, copied or put together multiple copies of it. Sometimes they're transmitted electronically in PDF form or available online. So we're not sure where these documents came from specifically, and we're not sure whose hands they went into. Anybody with a clearance at the right level, which in this case would be top secret sensitive compartmented information, with sort of the standard read-ins that come with a SCI clearance, could probably have had access to this material. And so that's a lot of people in the intelligence community and Department of Defense. And so we can't be necessarily sure. And oftentimes these documents aren't marked in terms of who gets them. And so that makes it harder to figure out exactly who had them, where they came from, and how you might stop these leaks. And look, there is a significant possibility that if we don't catch the person who's released them, some of these documents are very recent, dating back as recently as March, that they're still active in the government. They're almost certainly still active in the government. And if they want to continue to leak documents, if they think they can do it without getting caught, they may very well continue to do so. And that's a problem in and of itself.
What do you think has been the biggest impact, and how serious is this for our support of the war in Ukraine and the trust that our allies have in the U.S. with secrets?
Well, Lori, obviously, this could have a significant impact just tactically on the war in Ukraine, because it provides the Russians with useful information about what we assess the Ukrainians' capabilities to be. For example, there's documents that relate to their use of S-300 air defense systems and our sense of when they might run out of those capabilities, which could give the Russians very useful tactical information. There's also information about how they use the 155-millimeter howitzer shells that we and our allies have been providing, and the quantity and scope of which they're used. And so, you know, that information is the kind of information that the Russians might have. They're very good at collecting intelligence as well. But if they don't have it, this would be useful. And second, even if they have it, knowing that we have a particular assessment of it is valuable to them as well. So that's just tactically. Then you talk about the impact potentially on our allies. Now, look, some of our allies generally know that we spy on them. They spy on us. The South Koreans in particular are a very aggressive intelligence collector against us and others. And so this sort of, you know, mock outrage that, oh, my God, we can't believe you'd be collecting on us is a little overplayed. But the fact of the matter is that you know, some of this information does reveal information about stuff that's ongoing in their government or the Israelis' government or other allies, and our assessment of how those things are taking place. And so that can be embarrassing or challenging for them, not just because it's the U.S. collecting intelligence. That's, you know, problematic for their publics alone. But beyond that, the details about what's going on inside their government might be stuff that they don't necessarily want to come out either. And so that, I think, is partly why you see some frustration and might make our allies less likely to trust us if these type of classified documents continue to get leaked. And we've seen an increasing trend of these leaks.
So overall, how serious is this situation in your view?
Well, look, I think what makes the situation particularly serious, Lori, is one, the recency of these documents, right? The fact that these are documents that are literally talking about events that are currently ongoing or taking place, I think adds a lot. Historically, when we've seen documents released, they go to programs that have been around for a while or things that happened in the past. So I think the recency matters here. And then second, obviously, the level of classification is important. And then third, the fact that it might be hard to figure out who's doing this and how they got these documents out, I think makes it harder to stop these leaks from going forward. And so I think this is a pretty serious matter, and it's going to reveal information about U.S. intelligence capabilities. It may cause sources and methods to be cut off, because if you know that you only had this conversation in one place and the U.S. now has it, it means they're collecting on that communications methodology, and you're probably going to stop using that. And at the end of the day, it may also harm our tactical ability in Ukraine and our relationship with our allies. So in a lot of ways, even though this is a fairly small leak in terms of the number of documents, the nature of it and the recency of it could make it very, very serious for the U.S. government.
Jamil Jaffer, president and founder of the National Security Institute. Well, stories of leaked documents and top secret communications are the stuff of some thrilling spy movies, but occasionally they're actually the stuff of the very real world of international diplomacy. When the news of a serious and potentially damaging leak breaks, what does an ambassador do? My colleague Steve Karish spoke with William Taylor, former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who is now vice president for Europe and Russia at the U.S. Institute of Peace.
Let's pretend you're the ambassador now. The news of the leaked documents breaks, what's the first call you make?
Probably to the Ukrainian foreign minister. After I get the information from Washington about what we actually know, as I'm preparing to talk to Minister Kuleba, the foreign minister, I will want to be sure I know as much as we know about this leak, and I want to indicate to him that probably other senior members of the administration will want to have a conversation with him as well. What we have to do is be transparent.
Now, as news reports have been telling us, a lot of U.S. officials are still trying to figure all this out for themselves. Is it difficult to have those conversations with your Ukrainian counterparts when there's just simply so much unknown?
Yes, that's why I say, you know, I want to be sure if I'm the ambassador out there, I want to be sure that I know as much as the U.S. government knows. But I just want to be sure that the transparency is there. I want them to know that we respect, you know, we have confidence in their trust. We want them to have confidence in our trust. And even though you're right, Steve, that we still don't know the full extent of this, but we want them to know what we know.
Now, some of those documents said some unflattering things about the Ukrainian military and their situation as we go into what's likely to be a spring offensive. How do you repair the hurt feelings, the political damage?
Again, you're very transparent. You recommit to what we have always said and believed, which is the Ukrainians are doing an incredibly good job. That continues. The Russians are concerned that these documents are there to trick them. You know, the Russians are concerned that these statements about the state of the Ukrainian military being short of ammunition or short of air defense capability, the Russians are worried that that's a false information to lure them into having their airplanes fly over Ukraine again and getting shot down because the information was not right. All to say that we want to be sure that the Ukrainians know that we fully support them and that we are doing everything we can to provide them with the weapons and the intelligence and the training and the advice to make them successful on the battlefield to allow them to win. That's we want to reaffirm our strong commitment to Ukrainian victory.
So you mentioned that many Russians are feeling that this is false information to trick them. How does that fly with you? Does that seem like something the U.S. government would do?
Well, we have done some of that before. We've released some information, some accurate information about Russian intentions. You remember, Steve? We have released some information just before the Russians invaded in February of 2022 last year.
Sure, but that was official information. It was accurate information presented to the world. I'm talking about a slightly different situation where the United States would release false information under the guise of a leak to trick an adversary.
No, we don't release false information. We have released correct information that we know that the Russians are planning. So no, I don't think this is a U.S. Operation. I do not think this is an intentional U.S. Leak of information from these sources.
Is there any fear that a leak like this shows our allies that the U.S. is bad at keeping secrets?
Sure. Yeah. And so, of course, I mean, we've just demonstrated that that we can't ensure that this kind of release will never happen. We can't ensure that. I mean, no country can. And we have what we've shown by what we've seen is how good our intelligence is. Our intelligence is very, very good. It's incredible how much we know about the Russians. But it's also, clear that we have failed on occasion, like recently, to keep it to ourselves. And that's a shortcoming. And so that's a concern. Now, so one of the things is there's nothing in those leaks that gives away the Ukrainians' plan for this counteroffensive, where and when. It's not in there. Probably they haven't told us, and they probably shouldn't have told us for obvious reasons. This is a reality that when you have this much information about all parts of the world, I mean, the other thing we see is the intelligence, we have good intelligence in all parts of the world. When you have that much, it sometimes can leak, and you have to take that into consideration.
Ambassador William B. Taylor is Vice President for Europe and Russia at the U.S. Institute of Peace. He was Chargé d'Affaires at the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv, as well as the U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine from 2006 to 2009. Mr. Ambassador, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for your analysis today.
Steve, thanks for having me here.
Ukrainian officials on Wednesday denounced Russia after a video emerged on social media purportedly showing a man in uniform beheading a man whose clothing included a symbol worn by Ukrainian soldiers. News agencies could not immediately verify the authenticity of the video. I spoke with Anna Chernikova for an update on what Ukrainian officials are reporting about this.
Yesterday in the evening, it was another really terrible video out in public eye. And this comes right after the video that we previously saw as well with the execution of Ukrainian soldier. And this time, this video basically illustrates another execution. And this time, it's a beheading of Ukrainian soldier who is still alive. This is done by Russian soldiers, according to information that we have. We cannot verify it at this point, but it looks like these are people from Wagner Group. So what we know for the moment from official sources, from Ukrainian official sources particularly, that there is no identity of the Ukrainian soldier yet. Definitely President Zelensky already had a reaction. He mentioned how terrible this is. He said that Ukraine will definitely find these people and pay back. Ukrainian security service is already working on this case and investigating this case, and the Ministry of Defense announced that they are also working the whole night to find out who this person is and when this happened and where exactly this happened. It could be that it happened somewhere around Bakhmut, but again, there is no confirmation yet, and the only information that we can be sure of that apparently this video, at least this is, again, according to Ukrainian officials, this video is authentic. So this is real. Also, Ukrainian Minister of Defense asked media and society not to repost these videos and not to try to guess the identity of the soldier who is in the video in order to protect the privacy of his family. For the moment, we're just waiting for some additional details that would come from the investigation.
It's really hard to conceive that this could be true, and obviously we haven't confirmed that yet, but it's just devastating.
Ukrainian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Kuleba, commented on that. I would quote him that Russian soldiers are basically acting worse than ISIS soldiers, his quote. And of course, Ukrainian authorities will involve international court and international prosecutors to investigate this case.
Anna Chernikova, reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Meanwhile, the United Nations said Tuesday the number of confirmed civilian deaths in Ukraine since Russia launched its full-scale invasion has neared 8,500, with the true figure likely much higher. The Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights in a statement also confirmed more than 14,000 civilians have been injured. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Russia's spy chief has spun a conspiracy that the West is destroying an Orthodox church in Ukraine. Polygraph Info explains why this determination is false.
After the Ukrainian government ordered monks from the Russia-affiliated Ukrainian Orthodox Church to vacate the Kiev-Pechersk Lavra Monastery, Russian spy chief Sergei Naryshkin spun the drama as a Western war on the Orthodox faith. The current regime in Kiev and its masters in the capitals of Western nations seek not only to ban but to physically destroy canonical Orthodoxy in the territory of Ukraine. That is false. The issue is not religion, but the institutional link between the Ukrainian Orthodox Church and Russia, which invaded Ukraine. There are two Orthodox churches in Ukraine: the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, under the Moscow Patriarchate, and the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, which became independent in 2019. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church also declared independence in 2022, but that decision has not been recognized by the primary spiritual leader of the Orthodox Christian world. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church has condemned Russia's war. Still, many in Ukraine believe the church remains under Moscow's influence. Some priests have been investigated or convicted for collaborating with Russian forces. Ukraine has sought to sanction religious organizations and figures associated with Russia. Washington has not been party to the schism, respecting Ukraine's right to self-defense, while also stressing the need to uphold religious freedom.
Polygraph Info is a fact-checking website produced by Voice of America. The website serves as a resource for verifying the increasing volume of disinformation and misinformation being distributed and shared globally. Lithuania, a country that sees itself as directly threatened by Russia, has warned for decades of Russian aggression against its neighbors. Now, Lithuanians worry that what's happening in Ukraine could also happen in Lithuania. Ricardo Markina reports from the Lithuanian capital, Vilnius, that ordinary people are keeping up grassroots efforts to support their homeland. Jonathan Speer narrates.
Noise MC is one of the most popular contemporary Russian musicians who has taken a stand against his country's aggression against Ukraine. His music, always critical of the Kremlin, has led him to escape repression. And his refuge has been Lithuania, where he fled with his family. For them, going home does not seem like an option in the near future. Not without a radical change in the system.
The end of Putinism. Maybe not Putin itself, because Putinism might continue even after his death. All those people who are around him at the moment, none of them are good to me.
Those who have fled Putin's Russia have joined the Belarusian diaspora in Lithuania. People who escaped the repression of the leader Alexander Lukashenko after the 2020 protests in that country. The Belarusian opposition says Lukashenko's forces have put more than 1,400 political prisoners behind bars. Its leader, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, also exiled in Vilnius, tells VOA she fears that Lukashenko will join the war against Ukraine, which she says goes against the wishes of the Belarusian people.
Our main objective is to prevent the deployment of the Belarusian troops in Ukraine. And you know, our soldiers do not feel like being at war against Ukrainians. We do not regard Ukrainians as our enemies.
The old theater of Vilnius changed its name after the start of the war. It used to be called the Vilnius Russian Theater. Russian and Belarusian actors have found refuge there, a new professional home that gives them the opportunity to work in their language. But that's also a problem, as the theater has been heavily criticized for its use of the Russian language in its plays. It is something these exiles say they understand perfectly.
Culture means not hitting cities with missiles, nor destroying or bombing the theaters with 500 kilogram bombs. If that currently causes such a reaction among the people, I absolutely understand them.
After the start of the war, Lithuanian authorities banned entry to Russians holding tourist visas for the European Union. Even so, they ensured their doors remained open to all political refugees, Russians and Belarusians.
This is a country that welcomes people in a complicated situation for their moral and political stance. It was like that, it is like that, it will be like that.
Vilnius has become a refuge for thousands of people fleeing from Putin and Lukashenko. The big question for all is, for how long? For Ricardo Markina in Vilnius, Marcus Harton, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.